Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Do you know how to calculate the exact amount you need to charge your clients in order to earn 20% profit on that project? It's simple to do if you know how. Learn how by downloading our free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, today at entrearchitect.com/freecourse. Hello, my name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 223, and this week I'm speaking with Mike Maines about building science, climate change, and the pretty good house. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, RCAP, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM, specifications, and much more at arcat.com. FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work that you love. And Gusto. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. Modern technology does the heavy lifting, so it's easy to get things right. Mike Maines, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you here. Let me introduce you to our listeners. A former carpenter and furniture maker with a degree in engineering, Mike Maines worked his way up to director of design and business development at a high-end design build firm. He gave that up to pursue his vision of creating energy-efficient, healthy homes, first as operations manager at a high-performance panelized building manufacturer, then as a residential designer and passive house consultant, and now as co-owner of a design-build construction company, Maines Brothers Incorporated, based near Portland, Maine. Mike is also a contributing editor to Fine Home Building magazine, one of my favorite magazines, where he writes about building science and design topics. And he's also a member of the Entree Architect Facebook group, the Entree Architect community, which is where we connected. And he shares his knowledge in that group all the time. If anybody wants to join, it's entrearchitect.com/group. We'll get you there. You have to be an architect to join. It's a private group, closed group. So just request membership and you can get into. But that's where I met Mike. Mike, it's good to have you here. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark. I do have to start off by saying some people have a face made for radio. You might have heard that phrase. I like to say I have a voice made for print. I'm a lifelong stutterer. So if I freeze up here, hang with me and I'll get back on a roll.
All right.
We all have our things we deal with, and that happens to be mine.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being here because you have a vast amount of knowledge And I appreciate you coming and sharing some of that knowledge here at the podcast. I shared a little bit about your background. What I'd love to do is dive into your origin story. Talk about where you discovered your passion and your purpose and give us that journey to where you find yourself today.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So I have a degree in engineering along with a minor in art history. Actually, I had the same advisor as a recent guest of yours, Wynn Whitman. We both went to Tufts University. After graduation, most of my classmates went on to grad school for architecture or engineering. I wasn't really ready for that, so I decided I was going to make custom furniture. So I did that for a while. And after looking back at my profit and loss, I realized I'd made $2 an hour. So decided that wasn't really
that's more than most architects.
Well, you know, it was a good way to start. And cutting dovetails and mortises by hand was rewarding in its own way, but it wasn't going to pay back my student loans. Yeah. So I was living in Cambridge, Mass at the time. So I went to work as a carpentry contractor in Cambridge and then later on Nantucket, Massachusetts. So I did that for several years. Eventually my wife and I moved to Portland, Maine, and I got a job as a drafter at a small residential design build company. I ended up working there for over 10 years in pretty much every capacity, but mainly as a designer and as a project manager. For the last several years there, I managed the design department, overseeing several architects and drafters, and also managed business development and marketing, along with my colleague running the construction side of the business. We were basically being groomed to take over the company. We ended up growing it to about six or seven times the size it was when we started. It was a pretty large company by Southern Maine standards. And that would have been a great gig. I was living in Portland, which is a cool city, and I had a great job. Just one problem. Along the way, I had become more aware of climate change and the way construction contributes to climate change. At the same time, my wife and I had fallen into the slow food movement, which I know another recent guest of yours talked about, sort of organic food and know where your food comes from and the health aspects and the environmental aspects. And I think that has a lot of parallels to the type of design I do now. But basically, the result was that my values were increasingly at odds with those of my coworkers and our clientele, and I just was not able to get them to see things my way. At the same time, a friend had been building passive houses. We can talk a little more about passive house if you want to, but essentially super energy efficient buildings. And he was starting a new company to manufacture those in a factory setting, really the first shop of its kind in North America based on European production techniques. He needed help, so I signed on as operations manager. My wife and I sold our house in Portland, moved to the country to an old farm, and we got that business up and running. I learned a ton. It was great. They literally build the best houses in the world. No houses are any more energy efficient or airtight, or just it's a great system. The problem there was I was basically supposed to run the factory, and I realized that really was not what I wanted to do with my life. So I went out on my own doing residential design, along with passive house consulting and some just more general building science consulting, doing, you know, energy modeling and materials consulting and things like that. That's what I've been doing for a little over 3 years now. My most important project to date was Fine Home Building Magazine's first ever demonstration house, which they call the Pro Home. It's not like the show homes you might see in other publications that are all about glitz and glamour. This was really meant to showcase efficient, affordable design and good building science principles. And the goal of our project, and I believe other subsequent projects, was always a goal of net zero energy ready, which means that the house can produce as much energy as it uses over the course of a year. If you average everything out, it's tied to the energy grid. It's not an off grid house, but it basically is its own power plant and covers its own energy needs. So it was quite challenging, but it was mostly successful. I think we all learned a lot on it, and they're now doing their third version.
So you were a consultant on that project?
I was lead designer, okay. Energy modeler, mm-hmm. Coordinator. There was an interior designer, and we ended up getting a structural engineer involved. But it was basically my design, along with I work a lot with a freelance designer. So he helped me on it, but it was basically my design. The goal was to make it look like a modern farmhouse that was specific for a very challenging site, but that would also fit in and could be built anywhere and serve anybody from a young couple to empty nesters, with every feature imaginable, and four bedrooms, 2.5 baths in 1,800 square feet. So it was a challenge, but we did it.
Yeah, and we'll have a link to that. We'll go find that, and we'll have a link on the show notes for that. So if anybody wants to go check that out and learn more about the Pro Home, we'll have that on the show notes. You just go to the show notes for this episode. So that's where you are today. Is that basically where? So you're doing consulting now?
Well, that's what I've been doing, and it's been moderately successful, but I've kind of hit a plateau that, because I still live in the country and I'm committed to being here, I have limitations on growth, and I want to be able to do more work. I want to be able to generate more profit. I want to be able to influence more people to design and build better houses. So to that end, my brother and I have teamed up to do design build construction. So we started our first project this week, and another one starts next week, and a big renovation will start in June. So we're already up and running there while I'm sort of wrapping up my independent projects.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Maine's Brothers Incorporated in Portland, Maine.
That's right. Yeah, it's actually North Yarmouth, which is just outside. But yeah, we'll work within about an hour of Portland, which is a booming, great little city. So it's a really good time to start a business there, because there's plenty of work to go around. And because I lived there for 12 years, I'm still well connected. My brother is a carpenter and cabinet maker, so he brings those sort of hands-on skills. And we eventually want to get into development as well, developing maybe multifamilies if we can get into that world. Yeah. First things first, we need to generate some money, and we know how to build houses and design houses. So that's what we'll be doing starting off.
Yeah. And so this gives you a platform to finally do what you're passionate about. You've been working through the industry in building science and energy efficient homes, but never sort of under your own platform where you have the control over what you want to do and where you want to go.
That's exactly right, Mark. Yeah. I've always had a hand in a part of the project, and I think every project is always a team effort. So I don't want to pretend I can do everything by myself, but I'm a bit of a control freak and want to have more control. Just when you're a designer or architect and you hand a project off to a builder, you don't always have full control over what happens. If you're a builder, you have very little control over what happens, or some would say you have more control, because you're ultimately dealing with the client and not the architect in most cases. So because I've worked a lot in design build, I've really seen it has its downsides, but to me, the efficiency and of the integrated process outweighs any negatives.
So let's talk about that a little bit before we dive into the other things that we're talking about. I just want to talk a little bit more about the company and how you're structuring it. Because design build is a very big topic that we talk about a lot at Entree Architect. And sure. I'm curious on how you've structured that design build company. Can you dive into that a little bit?
Yeah. Probably not as structured as it should be.
But that's okay. That's exactly why I asked, because a lot of people are in the same boat.
Yes. No, both my brother and I, we grew up as very independent types in the Maine woods, essentially. So both of our approaches basically have a general idea what we want to do, dive in, figure it out as we go. But because I have done it for 10 years, I have a pretty solid handle on contracts and a strong network of builders and architects I already work with. So basically the goal will be At the moment, the only two employees are my brother and me. We have subcontracted carpenters we're working with right now, but we're starting to interview for carpentry employees. The goal is to build up a strong, solid company of employees and take care of the employees, make sure they have work. Just really, really focus on having a very sort of almost like a family type business environment. I mean, because it is family at the top. Because we'll have probably more capacity ultimately to build than to design. I'm also maintaining my relationships with a lot of architect friends who do similar work to me as me. So we hope to get some work from them. I know that's always a challenge. It's only certain architects who are willing to give work to a design build firm. But there's at least a few who I know will trust me to not take over their design, just support their design. In fact, two of our potential projects this year are for architects, like for their own new custom high performance homes.
Actually, as you proceed with that company and you start building a relationship with architects, you'll be able to prove to other architects that you are a collaborative company that, you know, that can collaborate with architects and build their projects.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I know it won't be right for every architect, and that's okay. I think we'll have a niche of highly crafted, highly efficient, low carbon footprint homes is the goal.
Right. You have a very clear target market. You're not just a design build company. You have a very clear message and agenda that you want to express with this company, correct?
Yes. I mean, that's my target, but the term green building is sort of out of favor at the moment, but the most important part of green building is the green money part. So if somebody wants to pay us for our high level of craft and are less interested in the energy, this is basically my whole approach to design. Is I push people and try to help them, guide them to go as energy efficient as they're comfortable with, yeah, and with as low a carbon footprint as they can. But I'm not saying I will only do this. It's basically I guide them to go as far as they're willing to go, and I'm pretty flexible at many different levels of performance and construction systems and all that.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect. We could not do this without them. RCAT, FreshBooks, and Gusto. Are you ready for a summer trip to New York City? Well, RCAT is headed to New York, to the Big Apple, for the AIA Conference on Architecture this June, just a few weeks away. If you're headed there, if you're going to the Conference on Architecture, come visit the Big Red A at booth 707. Tell them that you are an Entree Architect and that you wanted to say hello. Booth 707 on June 21st and June 22nd at the Javits Center at the AIA Conference on Architecture. They will be there every morning serving coffee. I am there. They're serving coffee every morning. So where else do you want to go? Just go to RCAT, and throughout the day, they will be having their BIM expert, Robert Wagen, explaining their new Revit plugin, BIMINITE. Okay? Revit plugin, BIMINITE. Robert's going to be there explaining all about it. Go check them out. Stop by booth 707 anytime throughout the conference to learn how RCAT.com can save you time and money, finding all the product information for your projects. And yes, it's all completely free. Remember, just look for the Big Red A. Just look across the expo floor and you will see it. Trust me, you won't miss it. Check out the Big Red A. And to learn more about RCAT and how they can help you be more effective and more efficient as a small firm architect, visit them right now at entrearchitect.com/RCAT. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. And getting started with FreshBooks is ridiculously easy. Most people send their first invoice seconds after starting their free trial. I did exactly that. The same goes for tracking time, managing expenses, collaborating with contractors, and viewing financial reports. It's fast, it's easy, it's life-changing. And if you need help at any time, their free award-winning customer service is just a phone call or an email away. And if you ever have a second thought, don't worry. On top of your free trial, for Entree Architect listeners, you get a free 30-day money-back guarantee. So you don't ever have to worry about choosing FreshBooks. You can give it a try for 30 days. Just visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks and then let them know that we sent you by sharing Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks. Check them out to access your free unlimited 30-day trial. Payroll and benefits. I'm just going to let that soak in a little bit. Payroll and benefits. Payroll and benefits, that makes my spine tingle. Payroll and benefits are hard, especially when you're a small business like us. You don't have time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations, and the old school payroll providers, they just don't get it. They aren't built for the way that we work today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. Modern technology does the heavy lifting, so it's easy for you to get it right. You no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great service for your team. And to help support the Entree Architect podcast, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive limited time deal. Listen up, sign up today and you'll get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to entrearchitect.com/gusto. Go check them out at entrearchitect.com/gusto and claim your free 3 months of payroll processing. RCAT, FreshBooks, and Gusto. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So you and I connected on the Entree Architect Facebook group, the Entree Architect community. Reason we connected is that I ask a question to sort of get the conversation going. Although recently I've had to do that less because the community has gained such a capacity and it's such an interactive group that people post questions constantly all throughout the day and tremendous engagement in that group. We get 50, 60 to 100 comments on every comment that anybody posts in there. But I posted about a month ago, maybe a little more than a month ago, what is your BHAG, your big, hairy, audacious goal? And I shared what some of my goals were, and I invited everybody in the group. It's a very intimate group, although it's 2,600 members now. But it's a closed group,
is it really,
and so
wrong?
There's a lot of trust built in that group, and so people are very transparent and open about what they're doing and how they're doing it. And so I invited people to sort of put their biggest goals out into the group and have other people comment on what they want to achieve. And a lot of people posted, you know, these big goals of what they want to achieve in life. And I shared mine, and you shared yours, and you and I had a conversation through the group, and which led to this podcast. And I wanted to invite you here to have a conversation about your goal. Do you want to talk about your goal first, and then we can have a conversation about how you're going to get there?
Sure. Yeah. No. So basically, my goal is to significantly improve the quality of residential construction in the United States. At least maybe beyond, primarily to prepare for and reduce the severity of climate change, essentially improve construction enough to address climate change.
Right. And you want to change across the board, because in order for us to affect climate change, which we can get into about what that means, this is a big goal, because it's not just you building, you know, you at Maines Brothers building sustainable buildings. This is about changing the world and the way they build.
Right. And it's a big goal. And I have no illusions that we'll be able to do it on our own, but by any means. Just I feel a deep responsibility to push my sphere of influence in a direction that's in a positive direction. I've done enough designing and building of houses that contribute heavily to climate change. I want to do houses that reverse climate change.
And that's the whole idea of a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal, is that big goal that possibly may not be achievable, but it's something that you're so passionate about that you're going after it. And if you get there, then that's great. And if not, you're going to do a lot of good along the way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, and of course, the term BHAG came from Jim Collins' book, Good to Great. One of my favorites. I've read it many times. It's a big goal, and I've thought a lot about it over the years. I mean, it's been at least 10 years now that I've been trying to figure out what mine is, and once I identified it, everything else sort of came into focus of this is what I have to do. I'm still figuring out the bits and pieces to get there, but I have a clear direction on what I have to do.
So what triggered this goal? Why are you so passionate about this?
It's really just as I learned more about climate change and realized just how heavily construction influences it. And I know climate change or global warming is, you know, there are political context, and not everybody, you know, believes in it, which, you know, are things like that. But I can talk a little bit about climate change specifics, if you don't mind.
I don't want to get into a political conversation about it. I'd like to get into the idea of what it is and how it comes about and what we can do to change it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, this basically for me, it really started. I was a freshman in college in 1992, and I took geology 101 just as an elective. My professor happened to be a glacial researcher that was his PhD project, and he continued to advise students on glacial researching. So he physically drilled deep cores going down hundreds of feet into old ice packs. He looked at the carbon dioxide levels going back literally hundreds of thousands of years, compared those to known surface temperatures based on radioactive carbon dating, and he saw the almost perfect correlation. And I mean, so this is basically what mm-hmm. Al Gore talked about, but this was way before Al Gore made his movie. Just as a quick my other Al Gore note was I used to work with a carpenter who was friends with the guy who actually invented the internet. So just that's an aside, but basically my professor showed us how CO2 levels were perfectly tracking temperatures, and that the CO2 levels since the industrial revolution started were far above any in recorded history and no sign of slowing down. So basically the short version is we're in trouble. Nobody knows exactly what will happen or when it will happen. They can't even really predict the weather for tomorrow, but the science is clear that there's a big changes are coming. Big changes are already happening. It may already be too late to really reverse the problem, but we still have a chance to slow it down. But to do so, we really have to halt greenhouse gas production in the next two to three decades, or the climate will very likely spiral out of control over some period of time.
The built environment is a huge contributor to that, correct?
Yes, and it's a thing. It's one of the things that kind of works against the sort of climate change education movement is the data is really hard to pin down. It's a very complicated topic, but the estimates for the contribution of the construction or the built environment are anywhere from 20% to 50%, most of them on the higher end. So as much as 50% of global warming agents are related to construction, either the manufacturer, transportation, construction, or operating emissions. So really, we have a huge, I mean, there are other factors, some beyond our control, but as architects and designers, we really have a unique role and a responsibility that we may not be the ultimate decision makers. You know, that's usually the person with the money makes the decision in the end. But as the guides through the process, we can influence what gets built and how it gets built.
You mentioned global warming agents, which is what's causing the climate change. What does that mean? Explain that.
So basically, there are various compounds that when they're released, they go up into the atmosphere and they stay there. They essentially, they allow, it's they allow solar energy to come in and reach the earth and warm things up, which is good. We want that. But that energy is supposed to also be reflected and leave the atmosphere to keep things in balance. And these agents basically block block the energy from leaving again. There's a whole host of compounds that are involved, but we sort of use carbon dioxide or carbon dioxide equivalent as a baseline. So sort of that's the common unit we use, is what's the carbon dioxide equivalent. But like, I mean, methane or chlorofluorocarbon refrigerants, just all automobile exhausts, pretty much anything you burn to heat your house or to create energy, coal, you know, all these things have particulates and compounds that go up into the atmosphere and stay there. And a lot of them don't break down. Like one that I bring up a lot is the blowing agents in the most common foam insulation, which is, you know, good old styrofoam, XPS, extruded polystyrene. The blowing agents in American-made XPS basically off-gas, go up into the atmosphere, and they stay there for at least 1,000 years that we know of. If you wrap a house with XPS foam, the emissions are roughly comparable to driving an average car for 2 years. So on one hand, it's only 2 years, but on the other hand, you don't have to have any of that. So the material choices you make really affect things. There's no one thing we can do. It's basically a million small things we can do to try to help where we can. So just the choice of insulation, the choice of foam. So there are different types of foam. Knowing which type of foams are better or worse helps. Knowing how to design without foam is even better. Then you can actually build using materials that are carbon sinks. So you're actually reversing the carbon dioxide problem by encapsulating it in the building.
The manufacturing of the materials that we're using, that we're specifying in the buildings that we're designing, as well as the energy that it takes to power and heat and control the climates within these buildings that we're, right? So it's everything.
Exactly. It's a mix of embodied energy, which is everything that goes into the building up until the day it starts operating, and then there are the emissions that occur once the building starts being used. So by designing net zero energy buildings, we're addressing the carbon footprint once the building is in operation. But there's still a lot of variables on the construction end of what materials do we use, where do they come from, how long do they last, I love concrete. I love working with concrete. It's plastic. You can do anything with it. It's incredibly strong in compression. It's got a lot of things going for it. Unfortunately, to make concrete, you have to burn rock until it turns into dust. It's a very, very, very energy intensive material. So I try to minimize my use of concrete. I use concrete because there are some things it can do that other things just cannot do. But I try not to build like whole ICF homes, because there are many other good ways to build a house that don't include running concrete right up to the roof line.
You said up to 50% of the agents are coming from the building environment. That's an estimate, you know, big wide estimate. Do you know how much of that is coming from residential and how much of that is coming from commercial?
You know, I should know that, but I don't know the proportion. My world has always been residential, so I'm pretty narrowly focused there. I know I've read what it is, but I don't have the data on the tip. There are so many more homes. I would have to think so. Even within the residential world, we do know, like in the passive house world, it's really hard to, the kind of houses I design, you know, small, efficient homes are actually really hard to make meet passive house requirements, which are the global low energy building standard. but it's relatively easy with a multifamily. So really, and it's actually relatively easy with a big single family home, which is backwards. So basically, the bigger the building, the easier it is to make it energy efficient. The smaller. It's volume to surface area ratio. That the most efficient shape is a cube, and as you spread that out, you get more surface area. I mean you get more volume compared to the surface area. So the energy loss is through the walls and roof and floor. And so if you can get more floor area, more living area within just a slightly bigger enclosure, then you have a great efficiency. If one wall of your house butts up against the wall of somebody else's house, there's really no energy loss between those two walls. If there's somebody above you and below you, then you have almost no energy loss through your unit. And so you can cut emissions from your unit by, you know, maybe 80%.
Yeah. And that's why I ask whether it's residential or commercial, because most of our community, the Entre Architect community who listens to this podcast, most of us are dealing in residential construction. Not all of us, but most of us are. There are hundreds of thousands of us, not necessarily listening here, but there are hundreds of thousands of small firm architects around the world who have the control over how these buildings are being built. Most residential construction is being built by developers, and so developers have their own responsibilities. But we have a huge responsibility, right, and a huge amount of control over what gets built and what doesn't get built. And so that's why I wanted to bring that up, that we actually, as a community, our community, can make a difference. That's why, you know, when I talk about if you build a better business, you can be a better architect, but you actually impact the profession when you do that. Because if we're all doing that and we all build better businesses, the profession gains strength, and we then have more control over what gets built and what happens throughout the world. And so we literally have the power to change the world. And so what Mike's talking about here is the same idea. We have the power to make these changes. All we have to do is change the way we do what we do. And so Mike, what are some of the things that we can do? What are some of the different, I know that there's passive house and there's net zero energy, and there's a new thing that you talked about to me, offline, and I'd love to talk about the pretty good house. Talk about some of those different methods and what some of us can do, because we're not all focused, and many of our clients don't even want to spend the money to build some of the houses that could be as energy efficient as a passive house. What are some of these different approaches? And then what's the most realistic approach to talking to our clients when we're presenting these ideas?
Right. Yeah. So no, there are lots of tools in the toolbox, and I agree that just if every architect was able to improve what they're doing by 10%, it would have a huge impact. So it's not that we all have to start building passive houses. Passive house, of course, is the global building energy standard that essentially specifies a very low use of energy per square foot per person, plus some other metrics. But I found that it's something that people invest in who want to do it for environmental reasons or to be leaders. It's the economic argument based on U.S. systems of buying and financing homes. It's a hard sell. It's a little easier in Europe, where they finance things differently. Basically in Europe, the mortgage goes with the house, not with the person. So it's easier to finance these things a little bit longer. Focusing more on multifamily is one approach. I mean, the American dream is not to live in a multifamily, but it makes a big difference on energy use. Zero net energy. However you want to say it is a good goal, especially if it goes along with materials that have a low carbon footprint, with the way solar energy, photovoltaic energy has come down, it can actually be a reasonably good investment. If you crunch the numbers, you can get, you know, upwards of a 10 to 15% return on investment if you can afford the upfront cost of the panels. There are a bunch of other high performance programs that they're all good. My personal favorite is the Pretty Good House. It started at a building science discussion group we've had in Portland, Maine for almost 10 years now, basically a bunch of building nerds, as my wife calls us, get together at the local green building supplier, and have a beer and talk about things like ventilating roofs and insulating foundations. It's been a really great way to share information and build networks and make friends and find employees and things like that. It's been a great group. And the topic one day, the moderator for the group came in. He had just finished building a passive house, and he just thought the 14 inches of foam under the foundation and this and that. He just said it's great, but it's too much. You know, it's not an easy sell. But the only other metric at the time was code minimum, and none of us want to just do code minimum. So he said, what would just a pretty darn good house look like? And so that became the Pretty Good House movement. I blog occasionally at greenbuildingadvisor.com, which really should be called Building Science Advisor, but since green is now kind of out of favor. But anyway, that website is a great resource. I published a couple of blogs there about what goes into a pretty good house. Essentially, there are It's basically the standard that's not a standard because there are no requirements. It's just basically being thoughtful about all the aspects that go into a building, from the design and maintenance and durability and health and energy use. In Maine, we came up with some prescriptive codes based on Building Science Corporation data that in Maine, we should be putting R10 insulation under slabs, R20 on foundation walls, R40 above grade walls, and R60 in the roof. So that's kind of our general standard baseline. So it's just a little bit above the 2015 IECC recommendations, but it's a lot better than most people are doing, and it really makes sense. My version of that is to do energy modeling for every bigger project. I use the PHPP, which is the Passive House Energy Modeling Program, but it's extremely accurate. It's also extremely intense and doesn't make sense on a lot of jobs. Very quick and easy is to use BEOPT, B-E-O-P-T. It's a free download from the Department of Energy. They make it fairly easy to plug in different options. You can start with a base with a code minimum baseline, and then see how much money or energy you would save if you make different adjustments. So you might start with R20 walls and see what would it look like if you wrapped the building with 2 inches of polyiso foam, and you can see what the result of that is. Using that system, what I do for most clients is I show maybe 20 or 30 options and show what the return on investment is for each of these upgrades, especially financially minded people respond to return on investment. It's a lot better to talk about return on investment than payback when it comes to energy things. People want to talk about how many years until I pay that back, but that's really not the best way to think about it. Basically, you're saying if you have a few extra dollars, you could put it in the stock market and maybe make 10% if you're lucky, probably more like 8% or less on average. If you put that money into upgrading your house and you're going to stay in your house a while, and you can pretty much guarantee a 10% return on investment or 15% return on investment, it's kind of hard to argue against. Even as low as a 5% return on investment, knowing that there are also environmental benefits, and it's virtually guaranteed, that can be a good sell. Once you get down to sort of the 1, 2, 3% return on investment range, things may still be good for the planet, or you may want to do them for health or other reasons, but I have a hard time recommending them knowing that the people could donate the money elsewhere or invest it elsewhere.
Where can we find that? The information that you just talked about with ROI, where is that? Is that on your site or is that somewhere else?
The information on ROI is that's something that I have my own spreadsheet I use, and I don't I am working on our website for the Pretty Good House. It'll be called thepprettygoodhouse.com. It's been an idea for years, and I'm going to try to get it up live, but it's not live right now. But eventually, that's the kind of thing that we'll have on that website is here's how you calculate a return on investment. You can use I tend to use just simple returns without calculating compounded interest and all that, but you can do a net present value analysis, which is a little more accurate if you want to guess at what inflation rates will be. Other than that, I don't know a specific place to get it unless you go through passive house training. But the BOPT itself is free from the Department of Energy. Just I think it's DOE.gov. And there's a pretty good support forum there. And we also talk about BOPT regularly on Green Building Advisor. And BOPT also has a feature I don't use. I'm a little too independent, but they have they do have cost data built into BOPT, sort of net national averages for a lot of different materials and products. So you can use an automated function of theirs, which is to let the program tell you what the most efficient path would be. But I basically like to do it longhand.
Is there
for the extra control,
a place where we can go learn more about the Pretty Good House?
The best place probably is to go to greenbuildingadvisor.com and just put Pretty Good House in the search bar. Two articles I wrote should pop right up that sort of were the introductory posts. And then there are a lot of other, it's discussed pretty regularly there. If you just Google Pretty Good House, the green building world mostly knows about it. A lot of people hate it for the name. I am not crazy about the name myself. It sort of is a, it's sort of an in joke. And I think the joke turns a lot of people off or just don't get the joke.
Not the best brand in the world.
It is not the best brand. My contribution or my suggestion was Wicked Good House. That was determined to be a little too New England focused. We talked about Really Good House is a good way to say it. You could also just call it's the concept that's important and not the name. So just basically look beyond the name. The concept is to balance expenditures and gains in a way that makes sense, but results in better buildings. And if you feel like you've, and a big part of it is if you feel like you've met the requirements, you can buy yourself a plaque.
Because I think that's really a great approach because, you know, when you're talking about passive house or zero net energy houses, those are really specific, and it takes a lot of convincing clients to move in those directions. An idea like Pretty Good House, where you just, you know, if you do this and you do this and you do this and you just tweak these few materials, or you specify this type of system instead of this system, the numbers work out and maybe even in your favor. But it's an easy, you can just apply it to the way you do architecture. And it's not necessarily having to sell your client on doing houses differently. We can just design them differently. And this gives us a way to say, okay, this is where I need to tweak it, and this is where I need to focus in order to get my designs to the next level and just contribute to helping this situation a little bit more. I love that
exactly.
idea. And I'm looking forward to your website because I think that'll be a tremendous resource at thepprettygoodhouse.com eventually. Cause I think that's something that we're looking for. That's the kind of thing that many of us residential architects, would love to have, to be able to say, okay, let's take these standards and put them into our systems and into the way we design architecture, because it's not going to increase the cost that much, and it's going to have a great impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not unlike LEED was a good idea. Is a good idea, but it's a little bit too much of checking the boxes and arbitrary. You know, you get points for importing bamboo from bamboo flooring, but not for locally produced whatever. You know, it's sort of just thinking critically about every step of the way.
And I, you know, if we want to really have an impact. And help you achieve your BHAG, that's the kind of thing that's going to do that. That's the kind of thing that will influence every architect designing homes or doing residential alterations. because it'll be easy to apply to what we're doing. We won't have to put a lot of brain power into figuring out how to do what we do a little bit better. I think that type of thing will have more impact than a program like Passive House. And I'm not against Passive House. I just don't think there's as many architects who can go there as something that's a little bit less stringent, but have more architects applying those values and those standards to the work that they're doing. That could add up to a lot more than these other programs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think we need both. Absolutely. We need leaders on the bleeding edge, pushing the bar ahead. So, like, for those folks, Passive House is already too easy. Now they're on to the Living Building Challenge and net positive projects. But for the vast majority of people who are basically stuck with code minimum as maybe too hard to get to, it sort of gives them a bar exactly. That's sort of in the middle there. It's not too hard to reach.
The leaders at the cutting edge. We always need them pushing the limits to the best we can, because then that trickles down to things like the Pretty Good House. We can learn from what they're doing and say, okay, we can't do that, but what they've taught us, we can apply to the things that we're doing and do it on every project we do and have a really big impact
exactly.
our footprint of the number of residential architects that we have. If we're all tweaking our projects just a little bit, it's going to have a massive impact. Well, I love it.
Yes,
I'm looking forward to the website. Until then, you can go to Mike's site. It's michaelmaines.com. That's M-A-I-N-E-S. So michaelmaines.com is Mike's website. You can also check out, he has a Facebook group for that discussion group that he talked about before. If you go to BS and beer, so BS as in building science, the word and beer like the drink, BS and beer. That's the Facebook group. You can go request membership over there and be part of the discussion on building science every day over there. So that's a new group. And so that's something that Mike put together. You can also find Mike on Instagram at Michael Maines. And you can, if you have questions or you want to continue a discussion with Mike directly, his email is michael@michaelmaines.com. Before we wrap up here, Mike, I want to ask you our one final question that we ask everybody. What is one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I'd say learn about embodied energy and energy modeling. Don't be afraid of the technical side of the business. Learn about it, embrace it. It may generate profits right away, and it will absolutely generate more work.
Excellent.
For you.
We'll
down
have
the
links
road.
To everything we talked about today on the show notes. So go find the show notes for this episode. Mike, thank you very much for joining us here today and for sharing your knowledge at Entree Architect Podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. It was great to be here.
So there you go. This has been a topic that people have been asking for a long time. Building science, climate change, these are topics that people have a lot of concern about. They want to do the right thing. So go check out Michael Maines and some of the resources. Go to entrearchitect.com/episode223 to get the show notes and the links to everything that Mike shared today. entrearchitect.com/episode223. You can go there, get everything you need, and that's the link to share. Share it with a friend, entrearchitect.com/episode223. Hey, I have some big news for you. Big news. Our friend Alex Gore over at Inside the Firm Podcast, he just launched a new course called Revit Rocket Ship. I love that name, Revit Rocket Ship. If you're a Revit beginner, Revit Rocket Ship will teach you everything you need to know to get up and running fast. And if you're a more experienced Revit user, it's good for you too. It will help you become more efficient. You'll learn everything you need to know how to do what you do on Revit better. Get your work done better, faster. Got it? So a Revit Rocket Ship. And this is the news right here. Not only has it launched, Alex has given me 3 free enrollment coupons. Three of them. But I'm keeping one for myself because it's been way too long It's time for me to also learn Revit. So I'm going through this course myself. I'm going to use one of these freebies for myself, but I'm going to give away the other two. I'm going to give away the other two to one of you. So here's how you're going to get it. I only have two, and I have thousands of people listening here. So I'm going to give away these two. This is how we're going to do it. I want you to go check out Entree Architect on Instagram. So this is what you got to do. Listen up. On Instagram, on your Instagram account, post an image of you in your workspace. So on an image of you in your workspace, and then in the text, post why you should receive the free enrollment to Revit Rocket Ship. Then, listen up, tag me at Entree Architect, tag Al at Inside the Firm, and include a hashtag Revit Rocket Ship. Hashtag Revit Rocket Ship. On Friday, June 15th, I'm going to pick the two submissions that I like best and send you the free enrollment. So get creative. I'm going to pick my favorites. There's five steps to win. Post an image of you in your workspace, share why you should receive the free enrollment, tag me at Entree Architect, tag Al at Inside the Firm, and include the hashtag Revit Rocket Ship, and I will pick two and send you a free enrollment. And this is a serious course. You're going to want this free enrollment. If you want to enroll today, if you don't want to wait until the 15th, if you want to enroll today, or if you just want to learn more, go to revitrocketship.teachable.com. Revitrocketship, one word, revitrocketship.teachable.com. That's where you can go and enroll. And as a member of the Entree Architect community, you can use a discount code 25%-off. So that's the discount code. Use the discount code 25, the numbers, 25%, the symbol, dash off. 25% dash off, and you will get 25% off if you enroll before Friday, June 15th, 2018. RevitRocketShip.teachable.com, 25% dash off. Get your 25% off today. And while you're at it, go over to the Facebook group, Entree Architect Community on Facebook, EntreeArchitect.com/group. It is the most interactive, most supportive, most encouraging, and most positive place on the internet for small firms. It's the place to be. Go check it out. EntreeArchitect.com/group. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, share what you know. Go get those free enrollments at Revit Rocket Ship right now. Instagram. Do it. Love, learn, share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gehry. Visit glengehry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.